Welcome to the Education and Empowerment Podcast. In this show, our hosts explore success and advancement through education by interviewing today's top leaders in the fields of education, business, and technology in order to provide insight into what it really takes to succeed. This show is brought to you by Forestay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. Forestay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forestay.com and landlords.forestay.com. All right, let's get into the show.
We're excited to introduce Michelle Hampton. She is the TOEFL Institutional Relations Director, who cultivates the use and understanding of the TOEFL program amongst academic institutions, scholarship organizations, and government agencies around the world in supporting fair and equal access to higher education and student mobility. She has been with ETS for 19 years. Prior to joining ETS in 2003, Michelle counseled both domestic and international students embarking on their undergraduate education as a college counselor for 2 years at a U.S. private preparatory school, and then in her role as an associate director of admissions for 14 years at 4 different U.S. colleges and universities. We hope you enjoy today's conversation.
Welcome to Education and Empowerment Podcast. This is your host, Bakhtiyar Soyev, and I'm thrilled to welcome Michelle Hampton from Educational Testing Services. There is so much discussion about, you should take this test or that test. And as long as people remember themselves, for international students, I was a former international student myself, you would certainly know, what is TOEFL. But there is so much more than just, this test. There's so much that Educational Testing Services does to unlock the student's potential. And I'm really thrilled to welcome Michelle Hampton, who's the Director of Institutional Relations at Educational Testing Services. So without further ado, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much. Pleased to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. And as we begin, I was wondering if you wanted to inspire us with a motto or a quote that wakes you up in the morning every day.
Sure. And the ironic thing is we're recording this the day after Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and it's a quote from him. And when I came across it, it just spoke to my soul. So it's a little long, but not really. And everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. So that's what works for me.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, Martin Luther King Day, definitely is a, great timing here. And, there is a lot of inspiration that's happening, on a day-to-day basis, for many people around the world. I was wondering if you can elaborate on what inspired you to pursue this field? Why higher education? Why, testing? And, what describes, the passion you have? What drives your passion for this field?
Sure, happy to. In my case, I came into the world of university admissions first. I had been lucky enough to grow up 20 minutes from the university that I attended for my undergraduate experience. And I fell in love with the thought of this high brick, or in this case, stone wall, and behind it, all these beautiful, big old Gothic buildings. And what on earth went on there? It looked really cool. So that was my introduction to university or higher education studies. And in my work and as a student at the university, I really came to realize that there are many students who don't know what they want in an educational experience, are looking for some guidance. And depending on the institution that they attend, they may or may not be able to get that kind of support. Or they could be, like me, technically a first generation going on to higher education study. And maybe they don't have a network of people that can give them insight. So it really started with my desire to help students figure out what it is they want in their educational experience. And I was lucky enough that from the very first university I worked with, and I've worked with a total of 4, I always interacted with and supported international students. Beautiful. And they had some of the coolest experiences. You know, I would come down to give an interview and the international student would have traveled by him or herself from whatever country they were from,
right,
taken our public transit in America, and then arrived at our university completely independent versus, you know, the typical U.S. student who is much more likely to visit the school with at least a parent or right, a counselor or a guardian, and seems much less independent at that same age. So it's been fascinating for me and exciting. And I've been lucky enough to go to many different countries where I've worked with some of my former students, but right, also just international students, period. It's been really great.
You say that. It's funny. I remembered my story. You know, years ago, I was selected to participate in this, you know, very prestigious exchange program that was administered by an organization called IREX. I think it's a program of Department of State. Long story short, you know, we were selected to participate at, you know, American universities, you know, basically English preparation program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we came in, I think it was like our first day or second day, and we were, you know, asked to go to like downtown on a train and experience the train. And so we got down to the train station, you know, together. And then, you know, the moment train came in, it stopped and, you know, the doors open, I see everybody jumped in. But, you know, me, you know, coming from, you know, this country called Tajikistan, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I have to let the other people go. So I stood and actually welcomed people to enter. And the doors closed.
Oh, no.
Funny enough, the train left. So I caught the second train. So my group left. Imagine, like, you know, 40 people got onto the train through other doors. And I was just like, oh, yeah, you know, after you, you know.
So, extra polite.
Extra politeness. And so that was, you know, my first lesson coming to America is be polite, but be assertive and just take care of yourself first.
That's right. It is a hard lesson to learn.
For sure. And I'm sure that, you know, there are a lot of international students that are maybe in the beginning of their journey who are, you know, trying to discover, you know, ways to come to United States or Canada or other countries. I was wondering, maybe you can help us to, you know, demystify a little bit, what is TOEFL and, you know, how does it perhaps compare to other tests like, you know, IELTS or Duolingo or like Cambridge?
Sure. So the TOEFL test, TOEFL first off stands for the Test of English as a Foreign Language.
Right.
So back in 1964, U.S. institutions were seeing a tremendous increase in the number of international students that wanted to study on their campuses. And right, they wanted to be fair and equitable in evaluating the students' English proficiency if they were coming from a non-native speaking English country.
Right.
So they reached out to us as a company, Educational Testing Service, and we created the TOEFL test. So what we've always done with the TOEFL is it is 100% academic in its content.
Right.
So we bring university lecturers to our campus and we use university textbooks to create the questions that right, are part of the TOEFL test. Because again, we're trying to assess the student's ability to not only understand what they're hearing in a classroom, speak a response, read the material that is assigned in the course, and also to be able to write their essays, et cetera. So it always focused on 100% academic content. And the scoring is done in a fair and equitable way. It's not done in a testing center. Instead, it's done anonymously. The folks that score the writing and the speaking section for us, for example, are ESL educators, many of whom have taught in multiple countries with multiple different levels of English proficient students, young learners as well as adults. So they have a very good handle on what would be the expected proficiency of a student at such and such a level. So we combine those skills of those human raters with the AI, the artificial intelligence, to make sure that the sentence is grammatically correct. The human is there to make sure that the sentence has meaning and makes sense. And that combination is important and essential to TOEFL. The reading and the listening can be scored automatically in the computer because it's a much more recessive skill. It's not as productive, but it does allow us to get a sense of what the student is doing. The other thing that's unique about TOEFL is that the skills are integrated.
Right.
So in the listening section, you're listening through your headsets to two people talking about material you just read. So that way it's just like your everyday experience. It's rare that somebody is only listening. They will have already have read material in the homework assignment for the course. They're talking with their peers. So it makes sense. Now, because of those features, that does make us different than some of the other tests for English proficiency that use a face-to-face interview, for example. That sometimes can have, unfortunately, an unintentional bias by the person who is conducting the interview. Perhaps, for example, the student showed up and didn't seem to be showing respect because they came and ripped or torn clothes. Right. So you don't want that unintentional bias of the rater to affect your score. That's not going to happen with our test. Right. Also want to make sure that test questions are really measuring your ability in English in multiple ways. It's not helpful if the question, for example, is very simple and rudimentary. Right. It's just letting you pick from a list of words, which words are in English. That's fine, but that's not indicating that you understand what they mean. And you'll be expected to do that on the university setting. So that's some of the differences between us and some of the other English language proficiency tests that are out there.
That's amazing. It's interesting that you mentioned that because there's so much, you know, material and preparatory exams and all kinds of courses out there, you know, both in person and, you know, virtually that, you know, you can take and you can see ads about, you know, ready to start your journey, you know, start with us. And, you know, we're going to prepare you for this. We're going to prepare you for that. Is there a sort of your collective wisdom that maybe, you know, you can openly share on what works to be successful at this exam? You know, perhaps there are tips that you can share that could be applicable, whether it's, you know, reading comprehension or listening or writing. Would love to hear and pass these on to our listeners out there.
Certainly. I think the first thing to keep in mind is that one of our missions is to facilitate higher education for students who want to study.
Right.
So with that in mind, we feel that it's our mission to provide free test preparation materials. Excellent. And also to provide test materials in that can be used by students with different abilities. So those who have learning differences, those who have physical gaps or challenges, for example, being able to get the test prep materials in Braille or in large print font. So we are dedicated to serving any and all those test takers who need to take our assessment.
Beautiful.
So first, always start with what's free because it's inexpensive. And education, no matter where you're studying, is expensive. So if you have the chance to take free test prep materials, definitely do that, especially the ones offered by the people who make the test.
Right.
So in our case, it will include multiple different versions of the free test. It's exactly like our regular test administration. You're going to be able to experience all four sections, become familiar with the kinds of things that we ask. And if you do your first practice test cold, then without any preparation, I should clarify, that way you'll get a much more accurate sense of this is my ability at this very moment.
Right.
And you'll find that there might be certain areas where you struggle or certain instructions that were unclear to you. So you can seek the assistance of either one of your teachers that you're currently working with in mastering English, or perhaps family or colleagues or friends who are able to read and communicate in English, see if they can help you. I think one of the best things in the world is social media because it gives students the chance to interact with each other all around the world. It happens to be that English is the dominant language in that forum, but it does give the students the chance to go out to the TOEFL YouTube site or any YouTube and engage with their peers or create a TikTok, you know, where they're practicing their English or watching the tips from other English learners or English teachers so that that way they can get those resources available to them. We also offer, you know, other test preparation materials that are available for small monetary fee, but that's all relative to everybody's experience, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, it really is a matter of looking at what is available in your area. I know it still amazes me how many students are learning English just by watching music videos and, you know, reading the different magazines or pages on the websites, or they're going out and also finding that they can look to watch movies in English, right. You know, and learn from that. So all of those opportunities are there, but it's a matter of practice. You know, I studied Spanish for 12 years, my life, but as time went on and I was no longer speaking Spanish on a regular basis, my facility has definitely decreased. So that's something to keep in mind. It's a matter of routine practice.
That's beautiful. I really appreciate those pieces of, you know, feedback and, you know, tips that you provided. I remember myself, you know, preparing for TOEFL. And at that time, I think it was paper-based. They called it PBT. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, you know, there was this yellow book that was very expensive, especially, you know, obtaining it was very expensive. And I would go and make copies of that and that I would print them in my room and hang them all around, you know. So every day I would, you know, find a either new word to increase my vocabulary or to, like, you know, practice. So, practice. That's the biggest takeaway in what you said.
It is.
Interesting. So I think one of the things that is very important for, you know, our listeners in general, if you can help us demystify, you know, there's so much emphasis on, you know, the scores, right? Oh, you know, if you do X score, then it means you'll get into undergraduate program. Or if you do X score, you'll be able to get into a graduate program or, you know, whatever it be. Or for some people who are taking the test, you know, for the workplace, you know, placement, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Could you give us a little bit more light into what's your experience been, you know, country by country with the average scores? Do people in the Middle East, for example, countries score better, or the ones in, you know, Western, you know, West or East, you know, other parts of the world do better? Or is it pretty much on, you know, based on individual abilities? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that one of the things we do every year, every calendar year, is that we create the TOEFL IBT annual score and data summary. And what it does is it looks at all of the test takers of the official TOEFL IBT test in any format, whether it's paper, whether it's the at-home version or in a test center. Right. And we look at that data in many different ways. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can look at that data by native language that the test taker has indicated that they speak, or by their native country. Right. So when we look at native country, we find typically, and I don't think anyone really listening would be surprised by this, some of the strongest speakers or highest scorers on our assessment are within, there's a natural affinity there. You know, the UK is there, Ireland's there, Scotland. So many of those citizens within those countries and in that region hear English frequently from their own public media. And then you'll also see some changes over time. So we've been tracking this for decades and decades and decades. So for example, in the country of Japan, you will notice that their English proficiency has been climbing over time. And that's because they've made a concerted effort to not only teach English to younger students, but also they're strongly encouraging native speakers of English to come and teach English in their country. So you will see a steady progression. We find certainly that for some of the countries in other parts of Asia or even in Eastern Europe, that their scores also are on the uptake. A lot of it, again, is that emphasis to bring in English education to younger and younger students, or sometimes a requirement within their own country's educational systems to demonstrate proficiency in English of a certain level to continue on in their studies. So that's very, very encouraging. We do say in that report, though, when we're looking at the data by native country or by native language, that it's not fair to compare countries to other countries. Because as we've just said, whether or not the Ministry of Education has made it a priority to teach English or require English proficiency of its citizenry really varies. And that plays a tremendous part in whether or not students or the country as a whole is going to show an increase in the overall English proficiency.
That's interesting you mentioned this. I know that Japan last year scored in the top 3 for a country that sends a lot of students for, you know, for English language preparation. You know, both of us were at the English USA, and it was, you know, it was a statistic that I was, you know, discovering, and I, you know, I really stumbled upon that as a, you know, great fact. And I'm sure, like you said, you know, a lot of countries are now paying more attention to, you know, increasing the capacity to offer English as a, you know, way of doing business, right? Or way of, you know, getting access to other resources. I'm sure to that end, there are many, many benefits to, you know, taking the TOEFL test and studying the TOEFL test and getting a high score. What would you say those are, you know, in your opinion, and what should a prospective young person who is, you know, thinking of going that direction, what's on the other side? Like, why should people invest so much time, you know, to do that? Tell us more about the benefits of taking the test.
Sure. I think one of the biggest pluses is it gives the test taker a sense of their own abilities at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. You know, we say within the profession of English language acquisition that the scores are typically considered valid for a 2-year window, sort of a shelf life, because the expectation is you're typically taking the test to apply to either, well, to study, let's say, and you want to begin your studies as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. If you enter an English speaking, an English medium of instruction, university or educational system, you'll then be using English on an everyday basis and your proficiency will naturally improve because you're using it. But for those students who take the test but then don't go on to study within that 2-year time frame, their proficiency, their abilities will naturally weaken because they're not practicing on a regular basis. There's always some students who defy that, you know, who do practice even though they aren't going right away. Right. But it's important to keep that in mind. I think for many students, the biggest benefit of being able to demonstrate your English proficiency is that it allows you to be considered not only for placement, as you mentioned, in university or for work, but to be comfortable talking to a variety of people that you'll interact with both on campus and off campus. Mm-hmm. So it could be that because you are proficient in English and you did well on the test, that you're able to take advantage of a work experience that a student who is not quite as capable in English can't enjoy. That can expose you to new peer groups and new people to engage with and new opportunities or even a new career path. Right. So it certainly can be a real benefit to be multilingual and be able to work in a variety of countries and situations.
Mm. You mentioned about countries. You know, I think the basic foundation to that is, you know, English, right? And basically the tests, how well, you know English in different reasons. Mm-hmm. Why is it that, you know, so many countries, you know, want to communicate in English these days?
So back in the day, the language of business used to be worldwide French, but, you know, that changed over time, partly because of the exposure to technology and the internet. Mm-hmm. A lot of that meant that English forward became the way of doing business. So it is dominant in that regard. It can always change in the future. Exactly. But I really think it was that increase in technology that made English really now the standard business language, as well as the way we communicate when we have technical problems. There's English words that are now in people's lexicon and jargon that they never had before.
Right, right. No, it's so true. I mean, you know, as we're talking about like multilingualism, I remember when, you know, I was young and if my parents wanted to hide something from us, you know, they would speak in different language, which we wouldn't understand. And, you know, I'm raising 2 bilingual children. And now if we want to hide something from them, we have to speak, you know, our own native language for them not to understand. And it's, you know, it's a vice versa. And it, you know, constantly changes. It's amazing to see so many young people succeed, you know, just the moment they started, you know, learning, you know, English as a second language. And I'm sure there are, you know, different ways to prepare for this. And there's, you know, as we touched on this, you know, many young people are now, you know, discovering that if they want to be successful and study, like you said, or work in a different country, you know, English is very, very important for them. So if you were to be in a position of, you know, giving some tips to prepare for, you know, the test, you know, sort of like a summary to these, you know, conversation, or let's say, you know, a relative of yours or someone wanted to, you know, like great tips and ways to prepare for that test, what would you say is very important? Like, would you tell them, is it time that's important in practicing for the test? Is it, you know, specific techniques that's important for that?
I really think it's familiarity with the test. So, and that's one of the advantages of the free ones that are out there. You don't necessarily have to take it, but if you look at it and try to figure out, what is this section asking me to do? What do these instructions mean? Am I supposed to highlight something within this text? Am I supposed to speak at this point in time? Will there be a buzzer that goes off that tells me it's time to speak? How long do I have to write? Right. Being able to write your essay in a timed format for many people is very hard. Even those who are used to doing so. So I would say get that egg timer out, you know, use the stopwatch on your phone, you know, and practice writing an essay in the time period that we give you on the test. So that way you can at least understand, what is it like? How far did you get the first time you tried? Were you able to finish your answer? Or did you only get to the first or second sentence and people don't know what you were going to say? With the test, we provide a scratch paper, which is just blank sheets, three blank sheets of paper that students can use oftentimes in that essay portion. They maybe want to write an outline as to what it is they want to say, identifying the highlights. You know, another thing that I think many students agonize over with an English proficiency test is, what if I misspell something, you know? And I can honestly say, having talked to those people who rate and score our tests, they're not as concerned with the spelling. They want to make sure that what you've written makes sense.
Right.
So if you've written, I want to turn the light of OF instead of OFF, they can understand that you should have written OFF.
I see.
But you didn't. So then it becomes the question of, did you understand the difference between the two words?
Wow. Yeah.
So it's one thing if you have a misspelling like that. But if you type as poorly as I do on the computer, and instead of spelling the, T-H-E, you write T-E-H, we can understand that you meant to write the. So it's not a penalty, and it's clear what it was that you were trying to say. So we can score your question or your response with that in mind. And that's, again, one of the reasons why we want to make sure that we have the human rater.
Right.
You know, someone who has worked with international students for years and can understand some of the common mistakes or errors that could be made. But I think as you prepare, timing is definitely important when it's a timed section. Becoming familiar with what is it that we expect students to do in each section of the test.
Right.
Understanding all the words in the instructions. Because again, depending on your particular English proficiency, that in and of itself can be challenging. You know, by taking that practice material and translating it into your native language, you know, so that you understand what is being asked, that can allay a lot of worries and help students relax and perform better. And know that in the case of TOEFL, every time you take the test, it's considered its own individual event.
Right.
And unless you either ask us to send your scores to an institution or you choose to share your scores with an institution, a school will never see your results.
Right. I mean, as you are talking about this, I'm reflecting on my own experiences, you know, taking the test. And I'm so thankful to, you know, the existence of, you know, TOEFL as a, you know, test of English as a foreign language for a few reasons. One is, it really helped me discover my potential, you know, personally, because when I started taking the test, you know, I worked with an instructor who I will always remember, you know, what she said. She said, I mean, when you're writing an essay, it's tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And this phrase always kind of reminds, oh, I got to have an introduction. Oh, I got to have, you know, the body. Okay, what's the first point? What's the second point? What's the pieces there? How do I connect this point here? How do I do this? How do I do that? And then, you know, conclusion. Okay, should I write the conclusion or is it too early yet? You know, so it really discovered, you know, this pattern or a sort of a frame, you know, in my mind of how to communicate. And as I grew, you know, to where I am today, this phrase, this advice that, you know, my instructor gave me, you know, years ago, I think it's over 25 years now, I still remember that. And as I approach, you know, audiences or when I speak in different conferences or even in our conversation today, it's, you know, tell them what you told them is what really inspired me to improve my communication skills. And I think the other thing that it brings to me as a good memory is that, you know, I was really fascinated to see that every time I took the test, both my, you know, writing and my speaking were, you know, I think at the point of IBT, it was like 29-30. So like I would really score high on those, but my reading and my listening comprehension, you know, was different. And as I've dived into that, I think there's a lot of insight that you can get from not only taking the test, but unlocking your inner potential to see what you're talented, you know, for. Would you agree with that? Is that something that you've seen to be true?
Yes, I definitely would. I think oftentimes we are not aware that we have innate abilities and innate strengths. So for example, on a test that would have English work and math work, if I take it, my math will always be bad. I know that that's not my strength, never has been. You can see it in my whole educational career. Right. But my English scores are always super strong. And thank goodness, because in some cases that's carried along the very bad math score and made up for it. We do have even innate abilities when it comes to the ways in which we communicate. As you said, you are always scoring strongly in the productive skills. You can speak clearly and well. You can write clearly and well. But it's the reactive skills of listening and reading that were weaker for you. So if, for example, a student knows that about themselves, they've taken a practice test, they can see that that's typically their performance, they could then focus their energies just on building the skills in the listening and the reading section so that way, when they go take the test the next time, they should see an improvement there. Right. You don't have to brush up on your natural strong points. Those will always exist. But focus your energy in improving the areas where you've shown you're weaker and need support.
That's a very powerful advice that you gave there, you know, and it's so true because, you know, if you know what you're strong at, like you said, you know, you will be able to address what needs to be addressed. And I've, you know, learned that, you know, some students, when they take the test, they'll actually take the test for taking the test, you know, just first, just to identify what they're strong in and, you know, identify which sections they need to improve. And then, you know, strategically spend that energy to improve and, you know, bump it up a little bit. And, you know, you could see really significant improvements there. That's really powerful advice. And I think, you know, here we talked about Japan, you know, we also talked about, you know, the importance of, you know, teachers and instructors and educators. And, you know, I've been learning a lot, you know, from you lately. And you know, I think it's in Japan, if I'm not mistaken, when a student is ready, teacher will appear. So it's, I think it's so powerful that there are so many educators like yourself and like myself and others who continue to inspire and educate and empower young people, you know, around the world. And I learned that there are different resources that educational testing services provide. Can you, you know, as we sort of wrap up this episode, can you share some of those resources, perhaps opportunities that educators can be part of to be better instructors and better, you know, educators, so to speak, of, you know, test of English as a foreign language? Love to learn about those, you know, resources as well.
Sure. We do have resources for educators because we know that they're vitally important to this process. They are not only the ones who are trying to inform and improve the student skills, but also they are in many cases the cheerleader, the support that fosters the students' desire to go ahead and challenge themselves and seek other opportunities. We have an entire section of the website, our TOEFL website, devoted to teachers and advisors and agents. So it ranges from workshops that we offer that help to demystify the test, the different sections. And we also have curriculum support and advice, lesson plans and work plans, so that the teachers, again, are really trying to teach those four critical skills. So that's what those resources are for, to work in that manner. One such resource is our free massive open online course, or MOOC, which is the Insider's Guide to the TOEFL IBT. And the nice thing about that is it is an online class that's roughly 6 weeks in length, but the instructor could choose to use that as their curriculum support. So the students are able to log in and focus on each of the four skills as an individual chapter or section. And there are exercises through that. So if the teacher wants to do it as a classroom exercise for everyone, they can do so. And again, it's free. So there's no charge to the instructor, the students, or the Ministry of Education if they want to use that. And then if there are some students who are unfortunately alone or don't have those educational supports, they can also access that as well. But it really is designed to promote that. Now, for the educators, we also have grants. We have a very strong grant program that supports those who are practitioners of English and those who are seeking graduate degrees in the field and all the way up to PhD, so that that way they're able to get funding for the research that they're doing in language acquisition. It doesn't have to be specifically on English. It doesn't specifically have to be in support of TOEFL itself or utilize the TOEFL materials, but it's to better the field of language acquisition and education. So those are some great resources in, along those lines. And again, there are more on the website.
Wow. Is there a central resource aside from the general TOEFL.org that you recommend people, you know, pay attention to?
Well, I think that that's, if you go to ets.org/TOEFL, that takes you directly into our TOEFL pages. And you'll see on there, you can access any of our research documents by scrolling down on the page. And you'll find that there are three tabs listed right there that you could click on. A tab if you're a test taker, a tab if you're a score user or university is accepting the scores, and then a tab for the advisors, teachers, and agents. So you can go freely between all the tabs. There are no restrictions or limitations. And you'll find that there is slightly different information on each, depending on what resources we make available.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Michelle. This has been, you know, very useful conversation. I hope that our listeners will find this, you know, inspirational and, you know, useful for them if they are educators or if they are, you know, directly students or young professionals who are interested in taking this test. We appreciate you enlightening us. Thank you for joining Education and Empowerment Podcast. And for our podcast listeners, if you want to learn more about the work that we are doing, check us out at about.forestay.com or podcast.forestay.com. Michelle, it has been a pleasure.
Well, pleasure to me too. Thank you very much, Bhaktiar, for the opportunity.
Beautiful. We appreciate you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Education and Empowerment Podcast. This show is brought to you by Forestay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. Forestay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forestay.com and landlords.forestay.com.